And gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is a Thursday, August 10th, 2017. Did you ever think we would see the day where we have a special prosecutor, or I should say more accurately, an independent counsel that is engaged in psychological operations, optics, the optics of political terrorism, I will say. Robert Mueller himself, acting in violation of 28 CFR 45.2, as in the capacity of an independent counsel, where he's actually a prosecutor, a witness, and an investigator. You can't do that. Now, we saw on July 25th of this year, White House Special Counsel, Independent Counsel had requested the presence and received the presence of Paul Manafort. That's right, Paul Manafort appeared before Independent Counsel, volunteered information, documents, everything that they asked for. Less than 24 hours later, in a pre-dawn raid, we're finding out through very interesting leaks. A pre-dawn raid took place at his home in a show of force, psychological optic show of force, and in the execution of a warrant. And now, of course, we are seeing a coup take place, and this is part of the coup. And Paul Manafort is what they're attempting to do here. Is a couple of things. The deep state is at war with Donald Trump. They want to take down Donald Trump at whatever, by any means necessary. So they're going after Paul Manafort, his business dealings, his financial dealings. This beyond the one page, single page, 2-point mandate of the special independent counsel. Far beyond that mandate. And, investigating things that have little to do, or have actually that Mueller has no authority in doing. Going after Paul Manafort in this fashion. What they had to do, essentially, and think about this, within the period between the end of that meeting between Paul Manafort and the independent counsel, between the end of that meeting and the end of the day, or at some point before that pre-dawn raid, they had to find a federal judge. They had to go to convince a federal judge that a crime was possible, that a crime existed. They had to provide probable cause for the potential destruction of evidence and convince the judge that in so doing, of course, there would be a crime committed, in order to get the judge to sign off on the warrant. That is, of course, unless the judge was an appointee by Barack Hussein Obama, which obviously in this particular area of federal district court, he would be. They're going after Paul Manafort for foreign banking, for violations, alleged for violations of the Foreign Banking Act, foreign agents, and they're attempting to squeeze him to get to Donald Trump. And again, this is all outside of the mandate. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, Samantha Power, all of these people, Imran Awan, for the most part, walking away, with the exception of Imran Awan, who was arrested, but the rest, of course, and all of the swamp dwellers, nothing against these people, no filings, no, as far as we know, no grand jury investigation, no warrants, no seizure of any equipment again, on behalf of admitted criminal activity, those who have engaged in criminal activity, Hillary Clinton. And James Comey said as much, by the way, obviously, on July 5th of 2016. But the bottom line here is the war of optics is heating up. This is very serious. I addressed a lot of this morning, 9 to 10, and I would urge everyone, if you haven't listened to my investigative hour this morning from 9 to 10, please do so, as well as John and Joe's program between 2 and 3. We've got, three different programs that run during the course of the day, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, that's our Hagmann Report, my show from 9 to 10, and Joe and John's show from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And the subject of my show, of course, and the, by extension, this show tonight, is the coup and concurrent civil war in this country. We are engaged in a cold civil war right now. We are also witnessing a historical coup take place. And we are seeing the do-nothing Republicans, the GOP establishment, essentially back Paul Manafort, essentially back these people who are criminals or who are the hands off of the criminals, the actual criminals. This Paul Manafort issue is deadly serious. Extremely serious, if you understand what happened here. So a federal judge had to sign off on a warrant, a pre-dawn raid. Think about that, you know, that flash bang of a grenade. Not saying they used one, of course, but when you have a pre-dawn raid, that's pretty damn, so that's about as serious as it gets. And that is, again, nothing but a brute show of force, and I certainly believe totally unnecessary given the fact that he was cooperating. What about the smashed hard drives, multiple hard drives of Hillary Rodham Clinton found, the smashed hard drives of Debbie Wasserman Schultz found in the garage of Imran Awan's previous residence? What about the 33,000 deleted emails, the destruction of evidence of Hillary Rodham Clinton? What about the tarmac meeting by Loretta Lynch, 40 minutes? What about all of those issues of real criminality? And yet you have a pre-dawn raid against Paul Manafort. To me, this is absolutely disgusting. And I'm going to tell you right now, we are so close to this cold civil war going hot. If you can't feel it, you're not paying attention. All of this, we're going to be talking with our first hour guest, Lexi Bess. And Lexi Bess, you might remember her from earlier, it was last month when she was on. I have dubbed her the warrior queen of the conservative millennials. The warrior queen of the conservative millennials. And I'm being very serious about this. She's a crack investigative researcher and a crack investigative journalist. She has done so much investigating and reporting on issues of the day. You can follow her Twitter feed. But again, Lexi Bess, the warrior queen of the conservative millennials. I'm not taking that title back. She's stuck with it. It's a meme that she's stuck with. Sorry about that. Okay. Hopefully she won't mind, right? But I'm going to bring on Joe. Joe, you can bring her in.
Yeah, it's great to be here. As some people notice, we have the video up and running today. Everybody's in studio. And we are going to bring on Lexi Bess from LexiBess.com. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed last time. So whenever I got a phone call asking me to come back for a whole hour this time, yes, I was absolutely beside myself. I was so excited. So thank you very much for having me.
You know what was great is we received, after your appearance, we received, I'm going to say, I don't, it was over 100 emails from people saying, have her on, and this time, give her some time. You know, it's great. Now, a little bit about yourself, Lexi, if you don't mind, just to reacquaint yourself with our audience.
Oh, absolutely. So I am a college student. I am a rising junior at a Southern SEC school. And I have a background in the military. I was in the Air Force ROTC program where unfortunately I was medically disqualified for a fish allergy. Yes, it's one of my favorite stories to tell. I was medically disqualified. And after that, I realized that I still wanted to serve the public in some way. So why not look into investigative journalism? So that's how I've landed here. My goal as a young female conservative is to spread the message that is not being spread. What we hear and what we see on Twitter or around social media, we see a lot of people are spreading the leftist view, or are, I made a video about this on my Facebook page, and the title of the Facebook video was, "Don't be the liberal vegan." And what I mean by that is, don't feel like you have to fit this mold. Really, mostly on college campuses, we have students coming in from a very southern conservative background, and they're almost brainwashed by those that they're around on college campuses, and they feel like they have to fit this stereotypical mold of being a liberal vegan. Everyone wants to be a liberal vegan. So the fact that I step on college campuses and I am the total opposite of the mainstream, of the main flow on college campuses, people are starting to realize that it's acceptable to be yourself and it's acceptable to stand for your values. And so that's kind of, I guess, where the warrior queen comes in, is that my goal is to be this voice for those who are either too scared or feel like they don't have the platform to voice their conservative views or their conservative opinions, especially as a millennial.
And it's so important today. And I believe what you're standing for is right and proper. And I'm so proud. I mean, it's like my daughter, you know, I'm just so proud of the fact that you are able to, and are really presenting the conservative values to a generation that, and I don't want to paint the millennials with a broad brush, but many within, or at least the perception is many within the millennial generation are morally, spiritually, and intellectually bankrupt. And I think that's not true. And you're obviously, you know, proof of that. And your tenacity for the truth is fantastic. And I would urge everyone to follow Lexi Bess on Twitter. You're known as Bessie, right? Or at Lexi Bess, but Bessie on Twitter.
And, yes, I am at okay. Lexi Bess. Yes.
All right, and then Facebook is the same, I believe. Correct.
Yes, the Facebook is Official Lexi Bess.
Okay, all right, good. All right, fantastic. Well, you know,
we're talking about the media, Lexi, I'm not sure how much you've seen of the new YouTube policy where they've been teaming up with the ADL and other organizations to continue to censor conservative content, stuff that they view as what they call conspiratorial or extremist or against the what the mainstream puts out as the accepted truth. What are your thoughts on some of the new guidelines on YouTube?
Well, so unfortunately, I kind of saw this coming. I saw it from Facebook with Mark Zuckerberg. So we saw Facebook kind of shutting down these Facebook groups that were conservative Facebook groups. The big Facebook group, it was Pray for President Trump, and it had a huge following. And that Facebook page was shut down. And the founder of that Facebook page made a video and shared it, explaining that pretty much he was shut down for his conservative viewpoints and that it would incite violence and all this stuff, even though I want to take you back to the attack that we had in Virginia when the shooting against Republican congressmen happened, and the person who conducted that shooting was a member of a Facebook page that encouraged what he had done and applauded him for what he had done. But that wasn't shut down before it happened. So that's just, I'm just going to put that to preface what is happening with YouTube. What we're seeing with YouTube is similar, but also YouTube is a part of Google. So Google bought YouTube I don't know the exact year. So we see what happened with YouTube, and we see this policy where anything that they believe would incite violence, they're going to shut it down. So of course that would mean someone would voice their opinions that would happen to make someone upset, because facts really don't care about your feelings, unfortunately. So we see these YouTube videos being shut down for their conservative beliefs. And then you have this manifesto, this memo put out by a Google employee saying that biologically female are not up to par with the technical standards that are required. Some, it was his and how, it was his thought, whether it was correct or not. It, at that time, that wasn't the main focus. He was claiming that there wasn't, he was bringing to light the diversity in the workplace of Google, and his diverse opinion is what got him fired. So.
Ironic, isn't that? Isn't that
isn't
just,
it
and there's a story.
It's like having a coexist sticker on your bumper and then being a member of Antifa. It's, you know, it's just hilarious.
And there was a story today, about Google and gender pay gaps where, somebody, I don't know if it was from Google, but put out an ad asking if women feel that they are treated differently than men. And within the first day, they received over 70 calls. I'll have to find the article. I just read it right before the show. But it goes to, you know, just show that Google is not the diverse, you know, all-inclusive, gender-equal company that it presents itself to be, and is in fact just like every other corporation out there in it for the money. And I watched an interview of Eric Schmidt from, it had to be 10, 20 years ago, and it was really interesting. I'd never seen this interview referred to before. I've never seen it before. But he was being asked about the bugs in his software from the search engines, how you get so many different results when you search something. And again, this was, you know, at least 10 years ago. And he said, well, I see all these different results when somebody searches one thing as bugs in our system. We need to get to the point where when you search for something, you only get the truth and just that one truth and nothing else. Which leads me to believe that as we know that they have been moving in this direction for a long time. But how long do you think before, you know, we will need to find a new internet, or places like Google and YouTube will censor us out of existence?
Well, it's a very scary slope, and it's hard to guesstimate. It's hard to guess, and it's hard to speculate what that time frame looks like. I think that what it's going to take are, it's going to take people like Jack Posobiec, who is doing this march on Google, and it's going to take the public to step up, your average citizen. The public is going to have to hold these organizations accountable. And that's what it's going to, now whether that fixes it or not, I'm not qualified to say, but I think right now, it doesn't seem ideal for there to be a third-party search engine when Google is so ingrained in so much of our social media. So it's going to take the fourth estate. It's going to take it. Unfortunately, it's sad that the press, that journalists, aren't holding Google accountable and they aren't calling them out, but instead you see these leftist journalists and organizations applauding what Google has done. So it's a very scary future when you are a conservative and you realize that whenever you search something, the search results are being moved around to what Google deems is true. So it doesn't seem like it could actually happen to where we could get a third-party search engine that would do as great as a job as Google is, when Google is so ingrained in so much of our social media and really just so much of our daily lives.
Okay. And I know, you know, guessing is hard. I guess the real question is, what kind of pushback would we see? Say tomorrow, you know, everything was censored except for the left-wing mainstream media accepted talking points. I wonder what would happen if people would go out in the streets and, you know, would, like we see Mark Zuckerberg trying to launch an alternative to YouTube. And I read about this morning. I can't remember the name, video something, but with these tech titans all having the same ideological mindset, it's hard for me to fathom that it will be any different than YouTube will be. And just like you said, Google is ingrained in so much of the internet, and that's done by design, that I believe, you know, unless people are actively seeking for information, they will just use whatever information pops up on Google, and people, you know, take it as gospel. They don't do the fact checking. They don't look for the truth themselves. They just continue. It's like cherry picking information you want to hear. And we see it on both sides of the political spectrum to some degree. While we're talking about the media, my dad opened with the Paul Manafort raid, the pre-dawn raid, and, you know, Mueller special prosecution, all this criminal activity they're intending to push towards Trump. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton gets to destroy evidence. No subpoenas were issued, no pre-dawn raids on her or her, you know, foundation crimes or her Clinton email crimes. What are your thoughts on this double standard of law?
Oh, my goodness. So it's hilarious. It's so insane that you almost have to laugh at it to make yourself feel better. So what we're seeing, I mean, y'all have probably spoken about it quite a few times, and I'm sure many people know this, but you have 8 of the 16 appointed members of Mueller's team have made political contributions to Democrats, while the other 8 have no history whatsoever of this, whether it be conservative or liberal. You don't see it from the other 8 members. So the only political party weight, the only bias that is on Mueller's team is liberal or Democrats. So that's a big red flag. And then you sit here and you're wondering, why is it that all this is, if we're gonna demand that the public know these, what actually happened with Russia, and the public deserves to know the truth, then why doesn't the public deserve to know the truth of the Democrats? Why doesn't the public deserve to know the truth over Hillary Clinton deleting her emails, or Loretta Lynch and all the things that are being said of Loretta? Why are there no investigations? Why are there no special counsel? Why are there no special counsels looking at those, is what the public, is what a lot of people are saying. Unfortunately, it's only coming from one side. Unfortunately, it's only coming from conservatives for the most part. But the hypocrisy is astounding. And this hypocrisy is what we've been seeing from the left for what I think has been years. So, you know, what was brought up in the beginning, those opening remarks as far as the Mueller investigation goes, it's a really big concern. And it makes you wonder why our Department of Justice is not being directive. Why is it being objective and allowing political bias to infiltrate what it's set in place to do? It's set in place to hold everyone accountable, whether that means that they need to hold the President Trump accountable, but they also need to hold the Clintons accountable. And they're not. They're picking and choosing who they're investigating. But there seems to be this argument that, well, it doesn't really matter that 8 of the 16 appointed members of Mueller's team contributed to Democrats, because you have to go through all these steps and you have to go through to make sure that the investigation runs smoothly. That's the argument that the left, that the Washington Post made a video the other day about how it explained why the political bias doesn't matter. And the public is reading that, they're watching that, and they're believing that. And it's just, it amazes me that we're just totally dismissing the bias there. We're totally dismissing how the DOJ leans more towards the left. And it's very sad. And it makes you question the integrity of our entire government. It makes you question the integrity of the FBI. It makes you question the integrity of the DOJ. And it's just a very scary time on who can you actually trust.
Exactly. And you know, Lexi, you've got fresh eyes, okay, looking at this with fresh eyes. I'm looking at this, what's taking place based on my observations during the Nixon impeachment, or the run-up to his, what would have been his impeachment, but he resigned before that back on August 8th, 1974, which, by the way, we just saw just 2 days ago. It was the commemorative date of that. But, you know, you had mentioned something, and as we near the bottom of the hour break here, about a minute away from it, you had mentioned Robert Mueller, 16 investigators, James Quarles, 30,000 he gave to the Hillary and or DNC. $30,050, by the way. Jeannie Rhee, $9,150. Andrew Weissman, $4,300. And then you've got Elizabeth Preloger. You've got Brandon Von Grack, Greg Andrews, Andrew Goldstein, and Rush Atkinson, all giving money. Those are 8 now, 8 of the 16, as you correctly mentioned. and not one on the not one of the other eight have any political show any political affiliation. So the deck is stacked against Donald Trump in this investigation. Quite frankly, I want your take on the other side of this on the break, if possible. I like to know what members or what people in your university. I'm talking about the professors. I'm talking about the students. What they're saying about this investigation, and in particular the impanelment of a grand jury, and you know, whether they think, oh, you know, Donald Trump is going down. Is there a celebratory mood? And that's kind of, again, on the other side. I would like to really get your take on this. But when we look at this, you're absolutely correct. And by the way, Congressman Trent Franks, a Republican from Arizona, House Judiciary Committee, is finally getting on board, or just got on board recently, saying that Mueller needs to go. But I just wanted to make sure that people were aware of that. But the trail of criminality that we saw under Obama is not being at all.
Trump's being prosecuted or investigated and harassed for crimes that have not been found, that he has not committed, while the Obama regime, including Hillary Clinton, Loretta Lynch, Samantha Powers, Susan Rice, all seem to get immunity from their obvious scandals and law-breaking activities, criminal activities that have even come out in the open, to where the investigations, reach their full potential in the public's eye with the facts coming out, but not being taken by any legal or federal agency with legal powers in the government, probably because of their loyalty to the Obama administration and his ideology, versus Trump and, you know, trying to put Americans first and making America great again. Can't have that in this day and age. Folks, our guest is Lexi Best. LexiBest.com is the website. We'll be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of End Times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Parada's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Lexi Best, LexiBest.com is our special guest on the Hagmann Report. Of course, it is Thursday, August 10th, 2017. We have her for one more segment. She is what I have been calling the warrior queen of the conservative millennials, because that's exactly what she is. She fights for what she believes in. Poli-sci and international relations major, and very well studied. LexiBest.com. Follow her on Twitter as well as Facebook. Do so. Up and coming rising star. She's got, I'm telling you, up and coming rising star in the media and poli-sci world. But to continue my question, and to wrap my question up, was before the break I was asking about because that was like a compound question I was getting to. Do you remember, Alexi?
We were talking about the double standards of justice. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, forget about that, because during the break, and folks, you have to understand, during the break we were having a conversation. Let's ask this question. What are you seeing on the campus? Are you seeing heavily anti-Trump, some level of sanity of, you know, what are you seeing among the professors and among the student body?
Well, what classes have not started back yet for the fall. I've just gotten up here early to get settled in. But what I saw a lot last semester, right after the election, right after the inauguration, all these students were losing their minds. Like, they had never lost before. They had never lost. They grew up seeing President Obama win two elections. They grew up with Twitter. My generation, literally, you have to think about that. My generation grew up with Twitter and with Tumblr and with these social media outlets that push the left idea and push the left's agenda. So a lot of my generation has grown up with that. Therefore, after the election, after the inauguration, I had one class. I remember this. I totally forgot to mention this during the break. I had one class. It was the day after the election, and it was an African studies class, and this professor was so upset that Trump had won. She made us sit. We sat in a circle around the room. It was like a seminar, like a discussion. And we went around to talk about our feelings on the election and how we felt. And she was like, I feel like after making such strides with President Obama, here we are now, and I'm just so devastated. I cried last night and all this stuff, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking around, and I pick out five other students that you can just tell that they voted for President Trump. We were on the same team, but it was five against a class of 40. So we're sitting in this circle, and people are going around and they're saying, well, I think that I have friends whose parents happen to be illegal immigrants, and I'm just so sad for their future. And in my mind, I'm like, well, girl, they shouldn't be illegal immigrants in the first place. So they should be scared no matter who's president. And then someone else over here was talking about, he's a misogynist and a racist and blah, blah, blah. And 30 minutes I dealt with this. 30 minutes. None of the Trump supporters said anything. And finally, I said, I raised my hand and I said, hello, my name is Lexi King. I'm not a misogynist. I'm not a racist. And I voted for Trump. And that's all I have to say.
Oh, wow.
And she looked at me and she was like, and the whole class was just shook. Like, I had just killed their firstborn child is how they looked at me. And so the teacher was just like, well, do you care to elaborate? And I was like, I was like, sure. So it really was picking a lesser of two evils. It was either picking a woman who was responsible for the deaths of, you know, many things, and a woman who deleted emails, and a woman who was just of questionable character and integrity through and through, or someone who had made who had said some comments he probably shouldn't have said, but is actually concerned about the economy and concerned about me having a job after I graduate. So the decision wasn't really difficult. Someone who was a murderer, or someone who said some questionable things, but had my job interests in mind.
There you go.
And
what? And the response couldn't have been pretty.
I was marked.
Oh yeah.
I was marked. I only had a few weeks left in that class anyway, and I was so sick of hearing about how it was a very heavy minorities have it rough, which, you know, that's an art. It was a very just anti-conservative. It was a very left class that I have been dealing with all semester, and I was done. I had had enough. So after I said that, these students were like, anytime that they spoke, their tone changed because they realized that someone was in the room that they were generalizing, even though they themselves don't want to be generalized, and they speak about that all the time. But these other students kind of changed their tone, like, I just don't understand how you can support someone who's just going to take steps back. Like, all the other students, they had something to say about what I had said. Like, they wanted to, like, go against it. And I just let them. I was like, I've said my piece.
Right.
You all have marked me. I don't care. Oh, and I mentioned the march because there were a bunch of people sitting, so I couldn't get to class. I talked about this last segment. All these students were sitting, and I had to get an officer to escort me to class because I didn't feel safe and I couldn't get through the crowd.
Yeah.
And I paid $20,000 to go to that class. So this officer escorted me to class. And I was like, and also, that what y'all are doing out here is not gaining anyone's respect. Y'all are literally throwing a temper tantrum. I understand it's your right to assembly, but he's the president. Newsflash. We have the Great Compromise. We have the Electoral College. He's the president.
Not like, my president.
Did they say, what's that, Electoral College? What's that?
The popular vote should have won. And then I looked at them and I was like, you realize that if you took away California and New York, the popular vote Trump would have won. Do you realize that?
And there's still some debate as to whether he did win the popular vote with the amount of voter fraud that they have found. And I know people will dispute the numbers that have come out, but didn't you cite that, a statistic?
Each
state had a certain percentage.
A recent survey, you're looking at 130% more registered voters than there are people alive, which, interestingly enough, seven different states that came through in this one survey. But getting back to what you said, I can almost envision you at your sorority house, your dorm room, pulling your covers back and seeing like a severed paper mache Donald Trump head. I guess you got to be old enough for The Godfather to really get that reference. But nonetheless, okay, wow. But so, okay. But I guess we're not surprised. But this is real. And you ran the gauntlet. You had to run the gauntlet, be escorted to your vehicle because you did not feel safe given the environment from the Hillary supporters.
Well, it wasn't even to my car. I just wanted to go to class.
Our class, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to go to the thing. No, it's okay. I just wanted to go to the thing that I paid $20,000 to go to. I tapped this officer on the shoulder and I was like, sir, they aren't moving. Well, I can't make them move, ma'am. I was like, oh, no, you can escort me through the crowd to get to class. And that's what he did.
That's and to think about that, that's just really crazy. All right. So where do you see, okay, what's the temperature today? Because I want to get into, especially given your majors of poli-sci and international relations and such, I'd like to get into like the Middle East landscape, kind of tap your brain a little bit about that. But what do you see today, what's the temperature today in the campuses? Is it Donald Trump's going down? Is it kind of like?
Has it died out? The hysteria died out.
Yeah.
It's definitely died down. I think a lot of students right now are very concerned about the whole North Korea situation. I had a lot of people that I go to school with, it kind of exploded on social media when Trump made the remarks, North Korea tests us, we're going to fight back. And a lot of fellow students freaked out. They were like, oh my gosh, this means that we are going to war with North Korea. It's inevitable. We're all going to die. It's like the Cold War. Like, I'm talking crazy things. So I think that the focus is still on Trump, but the focus has shifted more towards threats, towards national security threats. So now there's this shift from the U.S. is crumbling because we have President Trump in power. It's shifting to, oh my gosh, North Korea. Mm. Like, that's a thing. We need to be concerned.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we are now. People realize that this is an actual threat, and they realize that they're not going to die tomorrow by the hand of President Trump. Like, that's less likely than an actual attack from North Korea. So there's definitely been a shift.
Okay. And that's interesting, I suppose, given Donald Trump's Twitter history of late on balance. But then you toss in the remarks about, what was it, Fire and Fury by Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. The question I wanted to get in really before moving on is, because of your demographic and your use of social networking, what are your comments about Donald Trump, about his use of, like, Twitter, for example? What do you think of it? And do you think it's being received in the manner that it should be? Because he's bypassing the media tremendously. So what do you think about the Twitter usage of Donald Trump, given your experience and your demographic?
Well, I do think that when used correctly, it's a great way to get a message straight to the people that you want the people to know from your administration. There's no filter through the media, which is nice. So when used correctly, it can really help the public. I mean, you had radio and television through these different elections, and it was a way for the president to get a message straight to the people. And now you have social media. So it's just an evolution of getting a message to the people. However, the president does need to think or have a filter at times. Just at times. Like, like whenever he made the announcement with the transgenders in the military, he can do that. Like, that is an announcement from his administration that he wants to get to the people. Go for it. But when you have him make this slide remark about, I think, oh my gosh, I can't remember the exact representative, but I think Representative so-and-so should take a vacation to Vietnam since he's never actually been there but claims he has. That tweet, I quote retweeted it, and I had a little reaction to it because I was just like, I was so shocked that the president of the United States had just said that. It was so sassy. That's who he is. So I'm happy to know that that's his character, but I do think it's good to get a message to the people of an announcement when you want to get it to them. But I think that the slide unprofessional remarks shouldn't be posted. I do think that you, as someone who represents the United States, you owe it to the people you represent to present yourself with some form of professionalism, because you literally are the representative for the American people. And I view it as the same, since he is a commander in chief, I view it as the same as a military person. A military person always, well, from my time with Air Force ROTC, you are always professional. You don't hug. You literally do not hug other people in your uniform. You have your emails addressed a certain way. You have a certain presence on social media. You do not question the president. You do not question the commander in chief publicly. You just have these set standards of professionalism because you represent the United States of America. So I think that our president also needs to have those set of standards where he literally represents the American people, and he needs to be professional about it.
I agree. Now, since you brought the military in your relationship and your time there, I got to ask you, how many transgendered people did you know in the military? Personally, no. Or come across? Were in your unit?
None.
There we go.
We're in my unit.
There we go.
A lot of training, a lot of time was wasted to teach me how to handle transgenders. in the military. That's the part I had a problem with. And I also had a problem with the fact that I was told, because of a fish allergy, I took medical attention away from those who needed it. Meanwhile, there's someone who is seriously taking medical attention away from other people through his or her decision to transition. The amount of money spent teaching military personnel how to approach transgender personnel, and also the medical expenses and the all this other stuff that was being covered, it really didn't make sense that me, all you have to do is stab me with an EpiPen. I don't take that much attention, medical attention away from someone who needs it. This other person does. So when the president made that announcement, it completely made sense to me, because I was like, y'all, I fish out of, like,
yeah,
really? Fish. That seriously takes medical. And I understand that it's a small portion of people in the military that deal with that, but you have to think, I mean, if you have to take certain medications, or if you have diabetes, or if you're allergic to certain foods, you can't join the military. It's a very selective process. 1% of the United States serves 1%. So not just anyone, not just anyone can serve. It's 1%. So it would make sense that they would have these medical guidelines that's like, hey, if you have these hormonal issues, like, you're going to take a lot of medical attention away from those who need it. Like, I'm sorry, but no. Like, unfortunately, we have to disqualify you. I mean, same as said, people who...
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but it only makes sense because, you know, people with a heart murmur or allergy or some other, even learning disabilities, are not allowed to enter the military. So why, with somebody who's choosing to basically mutilate themselves, and as you said, you know, would require all this extra medical attention, and they went through the figures and released how much extra medical costs it would be per trans soldier. It's ridiculous that these people should be exempt from an organization that's there to defend this country, and such an elite group of people, as you said, 1% of the population is basically, I don't know, that's
what's
taken.
No, 1%
of
the military.
1% of the military.
1% of the population
1% serves in the military.
Right, yeah.
And it needs to be selective, and they need to have guidelines, and they need to have these regulations where certain people just aren't allowed to serve for the best interest, not only of the country, but of the other soldiers around them.
But,
and I think you're right on the money.
And what you said, though, and Lexi, you actually had to attend sessions where they had to tell you how to interact with these people?
With soldiers, fellow soldiers?
Yes. Well, I was told about this training.
Okay.
I was medically disqualified before I ever had the privilege of participating in this training. However, the person, soon to be fiance, this guy that I am with, he is still in the Army, he's in the National Guard. And I asked him, I was like, hey, in your basic, did you have to go through this training that tells you how to approach someone who's transgender? He was like, oh yes, we wasted so much time going over step by step how to approach someone who was a transgender, where we could have been spending that time focusing on other tactics that could have actually saved our lives. So that was kind of hit me right across the face, was the amount of, I think it is important to understand how to approach a transgender person, but I call it wasted time, because that transgender person shouldn't even be there in the first place. If you're not going to take time to teach the men and women of our armed services how to give me an EpiPen because I'm allowed to serve because of my fish allergy, like, if you're not going to take time to teach people how to use an EpiPen to save my life, why are you teaching them how to approach a transgender person who takes even more medical attention away from men and women in uniform?
Amen.
So that was how I viewed it. It just doesn't make any sense why, and that's where most of the money came from. Most of the money, it wasn't that this money was being spent on the operation. Some of it might have been, but from my understanding, not all this money was spent on the operation. A lot of the money was spent on the therapy and the medicine for post-surgery or leading up to the surgery. But a lot of it was spent on training. Mm. So it baffled me that we were spending all this money. Meanwhile, we have men and women coming home with severe cases of PTSD going untreated, as well as veterans who are homeless on the streets. But no, we're going to spend money to help this person with their decision that they made.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. I need to ask you. In fact, I got a couple of emails from people wanting me to ask you. Because of your activities on social networking, specifically Twitter, Facebook, what's trending right now? What's hot on Twitter? Whether it's politics, geopolitics, or is it something totally outrageously irrelevant to anything?
Right this second? Well, it's a combination. It is a combination of a lot of it's politics. I mostly get my news from Twitter. And whenever I say news, I don't mean like people tweeting. I mean, these news organizations and their journalists are tweeting, and I consider that news because it is coming from a journalist or a news organization, mm-hmm. and they're treating it as news. So as news, so I should. So you're seeing a combination of news and some celebrity gossip, but mostly news. What really bothered me, what was trending the other day, was Obama Day. That had me in a tizzy.
Yeah, I saw that.
Why do we have Obama Day when there's President's Day?
Right.
I'm confused. Not that I'm saying he did like a few things that were like decent that might be worthy of like appreciating, but why are you saying that you're not good enough to be in line with other people who are celebrated on President's Day, like Abraham Lincoln or George Washington? So you have to have your own separate holiday in Illinois. You have to have your own day to celebrate your birthday. Really?
Yeah, exactly. Now, of course, the excuse was, well, it's really not an official holiday. No one got work off. The state and federal offices were still open, but nonetheless, making him an idol like that is just incredible, I thought. And the hubris behind it as well.
Well, that's a major problem, is idol. People are literally idolizing him. Literally, people are idolizing him. And I guess you could just go ahead and say that that would probably be one of the biggest problems in our society, is we are idolizing material things, such as a president. Right. No one, no material thing should be idolized. I'm a Christian, so I definitely don't have idols.
Absolutely.
Material possessions are not important to me. I am here to get back up there. So I'm not going to idolize anybody. But what you see, what's wrong, in my opinion, with our generation, with what we're seeing today, are people are putting the President Obama up on this platform, up, they're idolizing him. Mm-hmm. And that, I think you could probably pinpoint all the problems to that concept right there.
I gotcha. What about the infiltration of groups like Antifa, Indivisible, other groups in, where you're at, where you're attending at university? Do you see a large presence or a presence at all of groups like Antifa, groups like Indivisible, groups like Black Lives Matter and other such groups? What's the level of presence?
Well, Antifa, thankfully, does not have a presence at my university. But that could change. I mean, that could change this semester. However, Black Lives Matter does have a presence, but the most presence I've seen are like candlelight ceremonies honoring those who have died because of police brutality, who happen to be minorities. I've seen candlelights for those, but I haven't seen a very strong, other than the Not My President. When Not My President happened, people came out of the woodwork. I was shook. I felt very overwhelmed, and I didn't know that that many people were on my campus. It made me very aware of my surroundings, but it's not as strong as I would say other universities, thankfully.
Lexi Bess is our guest, LexiBess.com. Lexi, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We only have a minute left. Any closing thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with?
Absolutely. So really my biggest thing that I'm trying to push right now is to not lose hope would be a big thing, and to hold others accountable and to point out the facts and to explain that facts truly don't care about your feelings. A study recently came out that whenever you allow your child to go through a transition and whenever you allow them to change their gender as a child, it is considered child abuse. When you allow your child to go through a transition, you are literally sterilizing that child when they complete their transition. That is child abuse. Facts don't care about the left's feelings, and you really need to hold them accountable to it.
Absolutely right.
Fantastic. Lexi Bess, the warrior queen of the conservative millennials. That's my title for, I don't know whether she likes it. I don't know. Hopefully she doesn't mind that. But Lexi, thanks so much for being part of our program and sharing what you're seeing in your demographic and your venue with us. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate what you do. And thanks for being such a great presence on social networking as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It is always a pleasure.
All right. Lexi Bess, we're going to have you back often. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Joe, coming up next is going to be Steve Quayle, Tim Alberino.
Steve Quayle and Derek Gilbert.
Or I'm sorry. I spoke with Tim Alberino. Yeah. Wood Green Innovative is a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right. You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water. But a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.